Hey, what's going on? It's Bill Burr, and it's the Monday Morning Podcast for Monday, July 28th, 2014. What's going on? How are you? How's it going? I just got back from Montreal, Canada, doing the wonderful Montreal Comedy Festival. I had an awesome time up there. I hosted one of their galas, you know, which is a big deal. And, you know, I'm not big on hosting. I'm not big on hosting because I have, my bits are long. And it's sort of like I don't really know how to write a joke. So there's a lot of cursing and making faces. And I build momentum off of that. So I just keep fucking rolling with that. And before people realize it, they've listened to an hour of my shit and I get out of there. But if I host, I got to keep coming back out and I got to get that energy going again. And, you know, it's fucking exhausting. So, to be honest with you, I didn't want to do it. You know, so you're probably like, well, Bill, then why the fuck did you say, yeah, I'll do it? I'll tell you why. Because I bought the Money Pit house. That's why. I am out there whoring myself. I'm going to tell you right now, because I was going to take the whole fucking summer off. I was going to take the rest of July and August off because I toured like fucking 18 months straight. And all over this great global fucking marble. And I was just like, look, I'm taking 2 months off. Right? I was going to have a great fucking time. I'm bringing Billy back. Yeah. And I was just going to fucking chill out and grill. I was going to sit on my fucking back porch. I was going to stare off into the fucking half a yard that I have out here in L.A., which is actually considered a decent yard. Do you know you can't throw a frisbee in my backyard without hitting something? I mean, it right as it leaves your hand, it probably, if I go the long way, side to side, I could maybe float for just under 3 seconds. It's not really a yard. I have an area. All right? Whatever. I live in a metropolis. So anyways, yeah, so I was going to take the whole summer off. And, you know, as these guys finished this one thing that they were going to do, the area that got damaged by the fucking water. And this is what I learned. When your house is fucking like 100 years old, 90 years old, whatever this thing is, it's just you have 90 fucking years. Well, let's say the first 10 years, everything's going pretty smoothly. From about 80 years in. All the way back, 80, all the way up to right now, you just have one do-it-yourself fucking job. Hey, I got a guy. I got a guy, see? I'll do it for nothing. Yeah. It's the 1930s, see? There's no code. Nothing. And when I tell you nothing, I mean nothing. Nothing downstairs in my house was up to code. Nothing. I know what you guys are thinking, like, well, hey, didn't you get somebody to inspect the house when you bought it? Yeah, but they can't see into the fucking walls. You have no idea what's in you. All they can just look at it, you know? They're looking for fucking sweat marks on the walls, smelling for water damage, checking the gas lines. They can do that, right? But other than that, you're pretty much on your own. And I'll tell you, all you guys fucking listening right now, if you're laughing, you have no idea what the fuck's in your walls. You have no idea what some douchebag did 20 years ago because he bought the Time Life books, those do-it-yourself fucking things. And you have no idea what that cunt rewired in your wall, under your floorboards. I mean, so basically, downstairs is laid open at this point like it's having open heart surgery, okay? And every time they think they got to the last thing, there's another thing. I know what you're thinking, Bill. These guys downstairs, they're taking you for a ride. Oh, yeah, I'm sure they are. But what they're finding is fucking undeniable. Do you know, they got to this wall the other day. And, of course, you know, it's got this shit fucking rotted out crap in front of it. They get rid of that. We get underneath that. We get behind that. And at the baseboard, it's just dry rot. The guy's barely touching it. And it's not like it's breaking off. It's turning into powder. Like fucking Long Chaney Jr. put this board in when he was a struggling fucking actor. That's how old this goddamn house is. And so they're like, yeah, we got to rebuild this wall. costs like $400-500. I'm like, all right, just fucking do it, right? So they take down the drywall plaster, whatever the fuck it is, and, you know, later on that day, like, I'm running around doing whatever I'm doing, and the contractor calls me up, and he's actually laughing. He's like, Bill, you got to come over and see this. And I'm thinking in my fucking head, like, dude, this isn't – whatever you're laughing about, this isn't funny. And I got over there, and basically behind the wall is like this dirt, right? They have like a, you know, this crawl space area. And what they had behind the wall is somebody had taken like this see-through like plastic tarp. And that was the barrier between the dirt and the wall, was this plastic fucking thing. And the guy was laughing, go, hey, I gotta tell you, I've never seen anything like this, which he probably has. But, you know, I know I'm just a comedian, but I know that that's not the way you're supposed to do something like that. But the good thing is that is the final wall downstairs. And of course it couldn't be built, right? Right. So, in other words, I'm going to be doing some shows on the Oddball tour this later on this summer. Ah, fuck. I swear to God. And this is the thing too. I could have been a cunt. I could have been like, dude, I don't give a shit. Just put a fucking wall in front of it and fuck the next guy. But that's not the way I'm wired. Oh, what are you, a hero now, Bill? No, I was raised properly. Fix the thing right. Just fix the fucking thing right. Because I'm not going to have you put a beautiful brand new wall in there with that fucking sandwich bag barrier behind it. And then what? I don't know what happens. Seemed to be working all right before they cut open the wall. I don't know. Sorry. I've had it with the goddamn downstairs. So that's what's going on. So if you hear drilling and if you hear all kinds of shit going on, that's the fucking people downstairs. And we're hoping that they're going to be done, you know. Initially it was end of June, beginning of July. Now I don't even ask anymore. Last I heard was end of August, early September. And come on. I'm hoping by Thanksgiving I can actually walk down there in my fucking slippers. You know, we won't have any money for a turkey. I'm going to shoot a fucking pigeon and I'm going to deep fry it, and I'll do it the wrong way. I won't take into consideration the space that the pigeon's going to take up, and the grease will go over and I'll light the whole fucking thing on fire. We'll start over again. Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. This is why I actually like going on the road. I like going on the road because I don't have to listen to the sounds. That's the sound of the money flying out of your bank account. All right. So I had an unbelievable week. Aside from going up to Montreal, the Montreal Comedy Festival, and seeing a bunch of great comics, guys I started with, people who started before I did, and then a bunch of new faces that I went down and checked out. Earlier this week, I did a show out here in L.A. that I mentioned last week. I was talking to Norton where I was going to play drums with this band. They had this cool show, like Best Goddamn Comedy Show or something, hosted by Josh Adam Myers. We basically, hang on a second. What the fuck is this now? Getting this fucking text. Come on. This is, you know what? This is one of these days. Like, I have to get into the right mindset because it's all going to just, fuck. All right. Anyways, plowing ahead. So, Josh Adam Myers hosts this show. He's got a band. And basically, you know, there's a bunch of comics that play guitar, or they sing, or they play drums or whatever. And you go up, you do stand-up, you do whatever you want, but you can kind of make it music-based. And then in the end, you interact with the band however you wanted to do it. So, you know, I was like, all right, I'll play drums. We'll play a Zeppelin song. And I was kind of thinking like, all right, if I just go back there, I can't remember if I told this story last week. I know I told you guys that I was going to do it, but basically I'll fly through it here. I basically was thinking, all right, well, if I just go back and play drums and I do a decent job, that will be interesting for like 30 seconds, and then people will have to sit through the rest of the song. So like a year ago, I was going to dress up like John Bonham for Halloween, and I ordered the T-shirt, a remake of the T-shirt that he wore on that concert film, Song Remains the Same, and I had the blue Adidas Dragons. Turns out he was wearing a four-stripe Adidas when he was in Seattle. And then I had the white pants. I went out and bought those, and my wife took me to a costume store, and we got the fucking wig and the Led Zeppelin I mustache that he had, you know? That was like a big thing with Bonham, with like how long it took for his mustache to connect into his beard, because his mustache wouldn't connect into the beard. And for the first like 3-4 albums, he had that beard that went like underneath his chin, like a fucking chin strap, like he had nothing up there on his face. And you know what's sad is by the time his mustache and beard connected, it's like he died. It was like his life's work was complete. Well, I'll post some pictures. If you follow me on Twitter, I already posted a few, but I'll repost them for people who have lives and are not on Twitter. But anyway, so I went back there. I had a great fucking time. We screwed it up quite a bit. We butchered it pretty good, but it was still funny, man. It was a fun time. And for the longest time, I was kind of looking for a way that I could actually play live drums and people would know that I wasn't taking myself too seriously. And going up and dressing up and looking like an idiot was kind of the perfect way to do it. And it also kind of gave me license where I didn't have to feel self-conscious that people were looking at me because I had this whole fucking get-up on with the sunglasses. I could kind of hide behind it. It was actually pretty cool. So I'm definitely going to do another one. I'm trying to, I think I already know the song I'm going to do and the drummer that I'm going to dress up like. I don't know. It's going to be a great time. It's going to be a great time, and the show will get big, and then somebody network will come down, and they'll turn it into a TV show, and then they'll ruin it, and they'll take all the fun out of it. So I'll let you know when the next one is. So before people come in and try to figure out how they're going to make money off of it, it's going to be a great time. So I'll let you know when the next one is, and you should definitely come down now as we're on the beginning of the Behind the Music arc on this idea. But thanks to everybody in the band and Josh and everybody for having me come down. I had a fucking awesome time. So, and with that, so that was my Monday. And then, like I said, I went up, what was it? Thursday, I flew up to Montreal, one of my favorite cities, with the team I don't like the most, the fucking Canadians. I don't mind them, whatever. You know what? P.K. Subban came down to one of the galas. I thought he was coming down to my gala. I was really excited to meet the guy because I wanted to ask him about that whole because it really seemed when, you know, Sean squirted the water in his face, like we had him. And then they did that, and then they just fucking rallied, and they won game 6 and 7. I was dying to hear what the fuck he had to say on that. And of course, he was at another gala. So I went up there Thursday and, landed, got over and did this show, Paul Provenza's, Green Room. And it was like sort of this remembering, all the great comics who've passed. That was, Patrice, Schimmel, Greg Giraldo, John Panette, Mitch Hedberg, and on and on and on and on and on. And we, told a bunch of funny stories and gave each other shit. I guess people enjoyed it. Robert Schimmel, I don't know if I said him. It was a good time. Even though I was dreading it, it actually turned out to be a really good time. But then afterwards, somebody mentioned that we forgot to bring up Otto and George, and I was just like, oh, man. So I felt bad about that. But either way, started off well. And then just every night, me, Verzi, and Tony V, the great Tony V, ended up at a cigar bar every night at the end, smoking Cuban cigars. And I got to be honest with you, I was done after two nights. I can't smoke a cigar three nights in a fucking row, but Verzi is a fucking animal. And by the third night, Tony V had gone back. So it was just me and Verzi. I got like a small one. And even then, I feel like I stood behind a bus. Like usually I buy a box of Cubans and I bring them back. And at this point, I didn't even want them. It's like, I need to take time off of this shit. This is too much. So, I think I'm on the wagon again. You know how I do it. I'm going to have 20 of them and fucking cigars every night, or I just say fuck it for like 60, 70 days. It works for me. All right? So go fuck yourself with your rolling of your eyes. Can't help it if I don't have any willpower. Actually, I do have willpower for 70 days, and then I'm good. But I want to thank Tony V. Tony V, I went up there, and they had this award show thing, and they were giving out these awards for comedy, which is, you know, silly. But, you know, what are you going to do? They've done a bunch of shit for me. If it was anybody else, I would have been like, no, I don't want to go. You know what? I'm working. But it's the Montreal Comedy Fest. Who doesn't want to go to Montreal? So I went up there, and I had Tony V do the intro, and he fucking absolutely crushed it. I don't know. That was a great time. And then the next night I did the gala, and I got to give a shout out to the people that were on the show, man. They were great. This dude, Mark Forward, who I worked with in Toronto, was hilarious. And we had worked in Toronto like the end of last year, and I saw growth in him, like major growth since the last time I was with him. He was fucking great. God damn it. I hope I don't forget anybody. Michael Che, who I wasn't familiar with. I made sure I went out on YouTube and I watched everybody before I went out there, because I wasn't allowed to say he's been on this show or this show, because we were up in Canada. And I watched his Letterman set. The guy was phenomenal. And then his jokes at the gala were even better. Shit, I'm getting old. Oh, Verzi. Verzi was on the show. Nikki Glaser, she was on it. That's how old I am. The show was literally 2 days ago. Oh, and then Chris D'Elia, he comes out, absolutely fucking murders it. He's a beast. And then Dom Irrera walked out, closed it out. Oh, wait. Kurt Metzger. I almost said Bert Kreischer. That's how fucking old I am. Kurt Metzger came out. He did this fucking bit. And what killed me was the I don't want to ruin the joke, because I don't want to do his bits, but he did this bit, and he was so clearly being absurd. And it was fucking hilarious. It was a bit about, you know, girls in their teens committing suicide, and he had a solution as to what to do to prevent them from not killing themselves. And it was fucking hilarious. It was absurd. But the reviewer was just like, it didn't go over well at the gala, and it did go well on the Nasty Show. It's like, yeah, that's not his fault. You fucking idiots. Do you think he's being serious? A lot of shit gets me going. But that really fucking annoys me when the critic doesn't even get the joke and they're blaming the comedian. Whatever. All right. So he fucking killed. The whole fucking show was great. The show was great. And I was actually, I was dreading doing it because, like I said, I was hosting and that was outside of my comfort zone. You know what it is? It goes back to early in my career where I hosted a show at the Comedy Connection in Providence, Rhode Island, and I ate my balls so fucking bad. And the thing about it is if you're just doing a set, if you go up and bomb, as bad as it is, you're tearing the Band-Aid off. Whatever you're doing, 10 minutes, you're getting it over with. It's going by in real time. If you're hosting, you go up and eat your balls, you get off, you got to go back up again. Bring up the next, eat your balls, bring up the next guy, go back up again. You just have to keep going back up. And it's not like you get to start over again. They're like, oh yeah, that guy that we don't like. And it just keeps going on and on for the duration of the show, which is going to be at least 90 minutes. So for 90 minutes, you're eating your balls. Even when you're not up there eating it, you're in the green room dreading and you're making a set list. What if I did this joke? Freaking the fuck out. So I think that I actually have a phobia. Or I did anyways. Had a phobia of fucking hosting, and that got rid of it. You see that? When you got dry rot on the bottom of your fucking house, you can get over a lot of fears. All right. Let's get into the advertising for this week, everybody. Stamps.com. Quick, convenient, and most importantly, easy to use. That's how I would describe Stamps.com. It will make your mailing and shipping a breeze. Oh, for fuck's sakes. Hold on a second. This construction people, hold on. God damn it. All right, I'm back. Jesus fucking Christ. Can we shut off the water for just an hour?
Hang on, let me ask my wife.
Oh, Jesus. All right, where was I? All right, with Stamps.com, buy and print official U.S. postage using your computer and printer. There's nothing to learn. Stamps.com will give you a digital scale. It automatically calculates the exact postage for any letter, any package. They'll even help you choose the best class of mail to get your mail on time for the least amount of money. Then drop your mail into any mailbox or hand it to your mailman or mail lady, and you're done. You'll never have to go to the post office again, everybody. Trust me, mailing and shipping has never been easier. Right now, use my last name, Burr, B-U-R-R, for this special offer. No risk trial plus $110 bonus offer that includes a digital scale and up to $55 free postage. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Burr, B-U-R-R, that's stamps.com, enter Burr. All right. Dollar Shave Club, everybody. The big razor companies think we're stupid. Every year they roll out some ridiculous shaving technology gimmick, right? And expect us to shell out our big bucks for it. Do you really need a razor with a vibrating handle? How about a roller pivot ball, back scratcher, egg timer, laser pointer, corkscrew? You get the point. You don't need it. I know I don't. We were shaving just fine before any of that junk. And I definitely don't need to spend my hard-earned cash on it. If you're sick of being treated like an idiot, join the hundreds of thousands of smarter people who joined the DollarShaveClub.com revolution. Dollar Shave Club delivers the best blades and grooming supplies for just a few bucks a month. Their blades are better than the big shaving companies for a fraction of the price. It's perfect. They deliver them right to your door. You'll always have a nice sharp blade. I wish they had this when I was a kid. My listeners can get started now at dollarshaveclub.com/burr. And hey, if you're already a member, you got to check out their new Dr. Cavies post-shave lotion. It's the perfect way to make peace with your face after the disruptive act of shaving. By the way, after shaving lotion, underrated. Underrated. You got to use this stuff. Stop getting ripped off by the big shave companies. Join dollarshaveclub.com/burr. That's dollarshaveclub.com/burr. And lastly, but not leastly, on this little ad chunk, Prosper Lending. In 72 hours, you could have $35,000 to cover your needs. What will you do? Pay off high-rate credit cards? Start a business? Do that home improvement project?
Oh, Jesus.
Host. I'm the worst. That was me. Add something you'd like to do with that money. I know what I'd like to do. I'd like to pay an extra crew to finish off downstairs. With our sponsor, Prosper, it's never been easier. Go online, answer a few questions, and see how your low fixed rate... Wait a minute. Slow down, Bill. Go online, answer a few questions, and see your low fixed rate in seconds. Your money hits your account in as few as 3 days. Prosper's the fastest growing peer-to-peer lender, and they facilitated over $1 billion in loans to people like you. Their revolutionary platform connects people looking to borrow money with those who have money to invest. There's no outrageous fees, no raising interest rates, and you'll never set foot in a bank. Just go to prosper.com/burr, B-U-R-R, to check your rate instantly without affecting your credit score. That's nice. For a limited time, Prosper is offering my listeners a $50 Visa prepaid gift card when you get the loan. Go to prosper.com/burr. Up to $35,000 in just 3 days and a $50 gift card. Go to prosper.com/burr. All right. Here we go. Back to the thing there. You know, one of these weeks, I'm actually going to look at the copy before I go to read it. I always do that. Personal experience, or I go, host. What a maroon. All right. So anyway, so now that I'm trying to convince myself that I'm going to knock off the drinking. Whenever I quit booze, I have to go like 6 days. I can go like 3-4 days and I don't give a shit if I have a beer. But once I get to 6 days, I feel like I got a little hitting streak going, you know, and I don't want to start back over at zero. So we'll see how I am this time next week. But I'm going to lay off the Stogues, going to lay off the booze there. And like I said, we'll see how it goes. And I'm trying to do my final push to tip the scales at $1.62. the last time I had a flat stomach and a little bit of abs over there. And I got to be honest with you, a lot of people are giving me shit for my diet advice, despite the fact that I know some people that have been, you know, some of the suggestions that I'm making, you know, quinoa salads and all that type of stuff. Somebody actually texted me saying, your diet advice is making me angry. And it's just like, dude, I think that has less to do with what I'm suggesting vegetables. Vegetables are making you angry. I think that has to do with you probably had, you know, an overbearing father like myself, you know, who didn't let you speak up and express your opinions. You could just write me and just say, hey, you know, why don't you try this? Instead of sitting there stewing. No pun intended. And then there's other people that, you know, are giving me shit just saying that veggies are for rabbits and all of that. All of that usual shit. I never said don't eat meat. I'm just saying what's been working for me. I'm in the best shape I've been in like 3 years. And everybody's saying my dietary advice is bullshit. It's completely working for me. And they're still holding on to that whole, you know, eat like a man. You know, fucking go kill an animal and go eat it. I'm not saying don't do that shit. But here's something. Here's something I would like you to try for all the meat eaters out there that are giving me shit. And I'm not even saying, they're so fucking paranoid, carnivores. I'm not even saying don't eat meat. I'm just saying, you know, twice a fucking week, this is what I do with the veggies over there. And they're getting their backs up. They're getting all freaked out. Let me ask you this there, steak dinner. I want you to do a little experiment, all right? One night, go out and get yourself a lovely, amazing steak dinner with the baked potatoes and the cream of spinach and your glass of wine and all of that. And I want you to honestly tell me how you feel afterwards. I know you feel full. I know you feel great. But I want to know how long after that meal before you just have to lay down and go to sleep, which is basically your body going, wow, look at this fucking mountain of work we got to deal with. Let me just go fucking lie down. Let's shut the body down so we can get this through our fucking system. If you go out and you have a fucking veggie dinner, right? That's of the same quality as a good steakhouse. I mean, I'm not talking about going to one of those things where they deep fry fucking zucchini. At that point, you might as well go to McDonald's. I'm saying actually a really, you know, a comparable to whatever steakhouse you're going to, go to a comparable vegetarian place and tell me how you feel after that. Okay, and I will always eat steak. I love a fucking steak dinner. I love chicken. I love all of that shit. I'm always going to eat that stuff. But it's undeniable, as far as I'm concerned, how much better I feel when I do the veggie thing. So I know I'm never going to stop eating cattle. So I just look at it kind of like with the stogies. Hey, I just take a break for a couple of days. That's all I'm suggesting. All right, so all you guys who are sending me homophobic shit, suggesting that I now want to lay down with another man just because I want to have a fucking cucumber. Well, dude, look at the shape of it. Cucumber's like a fucking porn star's dick, you know? It's like you're blowing the Hulk. Anyways, hey, this is a great time of the year. It's actually getting a little late, you know. I hope you guys, I forgot to bring up again, once again, to have yourself a little veggie garden. You know, our tomatoes are just starting to become ripe. And the other night, one of them fell off the branch there. And we cut it up, put a little salt and pepper, drizzled a little olive oil, made it a little, I guess, less healthy. Fucking ate the thing. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable what a tomato is actually supposed to taste like versus what the fuck you usually get. So all you guys out there who think I'm like, you know, slowly going to start, you know, walking on stage wearing yoga stretchy pants. I mean, I might have to do that one night if you know, that Josh's show, the best goddamn comedy show, whatever the fuck he calls it, you know, depending on what drummer I'm dressing up like. I mean, if you look at a lot of the hair metal and that type of stuff, some of that spandex, I mean, they were basically wearing yoga pants that were shorts, right? Is that what it was? I want to do a Striper song. joking. I would never do that to people. Anyway, so that's all I'm suggesting. So everybody can, you know, fucking relax. Can relax. What else did I do up in Montreal besides booze my face off? Oh, I did radio. I did some radio. I did Rich and Bonnie's podcast. Going in there knowing full well that it was going to be some of the most awkward moments in the history of radio, which is basically what a podcast is. I don't know why they call it a podcast. It's a fucking radio show.
What is this podcasting? How would you describe it? Well, have you listened to the radio? It's that, except it's on the internet. Interesting.
So if you've never listened to the Rich and Bonnie podcast, My Wife Hates Me, I would highly recommend it. And I went on this thing knowing that it was going to be brutal. And then me and Bonnie, we got this fucking thing where we like each other, but our conversations do not link up. You ever have somebody like that? Somebody you just cannot, like, you just... It's just been a 20-year misunderstanding between the two of us. I never know what she's saying. She never knows what I'm saying. And it just leads us to these fucking dead ends where we just both look at each other, shake our heads, and walk away, and then start over again at the top of the street. So that's essentially, if you'd like to listen to like an hour of that, with Rich Voss telling stories that really have nothing to do with what me and Bonnie are attempting to say to one another, I highly recommend it. I'm fucking around. It was a great time. People really seemed to enjoy it. And then also there was some really funny comics in the crowd. Judy Gold, you know, people like that chiming in and that type of stuff, adding to it. So, and this one old guy who fell asleep 2 minutes into it, we actually sent him. Sorry, I just had the hiccups there. I wasn't getting emotional. We actually sent him off into the corner so he could sleep and his friends could watch. And he nodded off for the whole show. I think we got a picture of him. All right. And then that was it. I did the Opie and Jimmy show. And I think that was it. That's what I did. That was my festival. And another one. Another Montreal comedy festival. Down the fucking tubes. All right. Hey, you know, don't look now, but the New York Yankees are making a push for the playoffs. Those sons of bitches are actually in the wild card. And as a fan of Derek Jeter, I'd like to see him make it just to see Jeter do one more postseason. Of course, I want to see the Yankees lose, which is always bigger. Is bigger than my respect for Derek Jeter. But I don't know. Be kind of sad if that was like, you know, fucking end of the season. And then that was just it. I do have tickets to the to that last game he's playing at Fenway Park. Did I tell you guys I bought in half on Red Sox season tickets this year? Buddy of mine was on a waiting list for 10 years and he got these great seats. And he's like, I can't swing these, man. I need some more people to buy in. So I bought in for my little block of tickets. Me and a couple other guys or whatever. And because they're expensive as shit. And I'm thinking like, all right, well, you know, I got enough family and friends back there that I can sell them to them. And then I can, you know, the Sox don't care if you put them up on StubHub. So I'm like, I'll be fine. Right. And, you know, the Red Sox shit the bed from day one and I can't give these things away. I lost my shirt on these tickets. Once again, Bill Burr on the Comedy Oddball Tour later on this summer. Jesus fucking Christ. So, but I do have that. You know what's funny is I could sell that pair of tickets on StubHub and I could make a ton of fucking money. A ton of my money back. I would still lose. But especially if the Yankees don't make the playoffs and that could actually be like his last fucking game, I think. It's a possibility. This is a sports fan. There's no fucking way. I'd rather be there. I've never been like, you know, I remember a long time ago, two of my buddies, they got season tickets to the Patriots in 1985. And the Patriots ended up going to the Super Bowl. And they had tickets to go to Super Bowl 20. And they both scalped them. And I thought it was the dumbest thing ever. And even though we lost 46-10, even though we got fucking destroyed, it's just like, I would still rather go to Super Bowl 20. and actually see the 46 defense live. You could have saw Walter Payton. All of those, you know, Richard Dent, Wilbur Marshall, all of those fucking Hall of Famers, all of those people you could have seen. You know, Jim McMahon versus fucking Tony Eason, and then an old Steve Grogan coming in, that whole fight. That would have been great. And you get to party down in New Orleans. I always think the experience, even if your team loses, is way better than selling. I mean, maybe I'm a fucking jackass, but I always look at it that way. So I'm definitely going back for that game. You know, maybe I'll pick up like a one-nighter along the way. But I'm really looking forward to going to that. Wow, so maybe I should be rooting for the Yankees not to make the playoffs. So that'll be his last game. So actually they'll be like in like the fucking bottom of the eighth or the top of the ninth. Derek Jeter coming up for his final fucking at bat. What if he hits a home run to right field like fucking Ted Williams? You know he's going to do something. And football is right around the corner. This is such an exciting time. Is there anything more exciting than when you see them, they start going to like fucking training camp? The greatest month of the year for me is September. It's just like, I always get depressed at how like fast the summer goes by. And then when all of a sudden it's September and it's football and the games count and there's college football and all of that type of shit. It's just it's the greatest. It's the fucking greatest. I can't wait. So, I mean, what else am I going to do for the rest of the summer, huh? Go out and sunbathe over there? All right. Let's get into some of your questions here for the week. The flute says, Bill, you took a hammering from a lot of people on all fronts, Twitter, Facebook, and emails. 9-10 mentioned, 90%, I guess, mentioned Anchorman. Others suggest you YouTube jazz flute players. Listen, go fuck yourselves. All right. First of all you guys who said when I said there's no cool way to play the flute and then you bring up Anchorman, he was mocking playing jazz flute. He was making fun of it. It's a fucking movie. Do you think those flames were actually real coming out of the end of it? Do you think he really drank a fucking drink out of that thing? It was using it as a straw. It was a joke. All right. And as far as jazz flute, let me tell you something right now. I'm not saying that there's not virtuoso play. I don't want to hear it. There's certain instruments that, listen, if you want to accompany like some shit with the flute, absolutely. All right. But there's a reason why there's no fucking flute players in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And don't even bring up that fucking whatever that fucking guy is. That Jethro Tull guy, I don't even want to fucking hear it. He did not get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because of his flute playing. It was the fucking rock music underneath it. Okay? So you can take your flute, turn it up sideways, and shove it straight up your candy ass. No. I stand by that. I put the flute right up with the oboe. Now, if I go watch a classic, I guess I was talking to like rock music. All right? Even jazz, you can go fuck yourself. I'd much rather. A trumpet has so much more power. Saxophone, trombone, all of that shit. I would rather listen to that than the goddamn flute. Now, you take a flute and a piccolo and you stick that shit in a symphony. I can listen to it then. Then I find it an amazing accompaniment. If you have, I can't even say any of the words I'm trying to use right now. If you fucking have 40 other fucking musicians, okay, helping to flesh out all around a fucking flute, I can listen to it. Or a piccolo, I can listen to that. If you want to have one little movement where, you know, you got some dreadful fucking music and all is lost and all of a sudden there's a ray of light at the top of the fucking tunnel and you want to emphasize that with a little, what is that up there? Kind of fucking notes with a flute or a piccolo? Have at it. Have at it. But I don't want to listen to a fucking hour of that shit. I stand by it. Fuck all you flute-playing fucking assholes out there. Who would have thought? Who would have thought that that would have become a controversy? All right. Hey, Bill, when's your next special going to be available on Netflix? We are shooting for December 5th. December 5th is going to be the release date, and I'm editing it right now, and I could not be happier
with the way that this thing looks. I can't wait for you guys to see it. And I am in the process of writing my new hour. And I come in right out of the gate with a it's a rough one, you know. It's really just coming off as sexist. And I have to be honest because I can't stand outside of myself. I can't have like a, Jesus Christ, what are they ripping up downstairs now? You know what I think they're doing? I think they're getting rid of it. This is actually exciting. I have all this galvanized pipe in my house. And they're fucking yanking because, like I said, it's been filleted downstairs and you can see all of it. And they're like, well, we might as well change it now before it bursts. They always put that fear in your head. Hey, we're building this beautiful bathroom, but sure it'd be a shame if this shit behind the wall bursts. I mean, we can risk it. And you're like, all right, just fucking do it. I'm not going to make any money off this house. I'm going to have to fucking live to be 150. Oh, Christ. The only good thing about buying a fucking house is that if you want to change something, you can. You don't have to clear it with your landlord. But as far as making any money off your house, it's a fucking pipe dream. Unless you fucking start fucking over other people. And when the market's hot, you go in and you buy houses and you do a half-ass fucking job. You half-ass the whole fucking thing. You don't even know what the fuck you're doing. That's why I hate that show where they flip this house. I can't stand watching those people who aren't car. Like, they sit there and they'll show the guy who bought the house. He's trying to figure out how to use the sander or whatever to redo hardwood floors. He doesn't even know what he's doing. They're playing this silly music. And he does a fucking half-ass job. And then you watch these suckers come in. Because what he did is all brand new, so it's still holding together and it hasn't fallen apart yet. And you're just watching these people getting led off to fucking financial slaughter. Sorry. Anyways, so this opening bit that I'm doing, I can't tell if it's coming off sexist or I just am sexist. The point of it isn't sexism, but it's really coming off like that. It's really been especially up there in Montreal. Oh, Jesus. I opened with that at the gala. I'm sure they'll edit that one out. So anyways, yeah, the next one, it's going to be December 5th. And also, my comedy album is finally done. Finally went through all the red tape with Carnegie Hall. Finally got them pressed. All the records pressed. I'm going to find out today. I actually have them in my house. I have to find out when I can sell these things to you because they're also going to be available in stores. But the fucker is done. And I think I'm going to be doing a co-release with Aziz Ansari on Third Man Records, which is Jack White's label. Out of Nashville, Tennessee. So that's a little teaser. That should be coming up in the next, I don't know when, in the next month or so, I hope. I'm really hoping. I think they're finishing up Aziz's album. So it's going to be pretty cool. And once again, I really want to stress this, okay? The material that's on my Carnegie album is, that was November of 2011. And when I taped You People Are All the Same, that was March of 2012. So that's December, January, February, March, 4 months later. So this was where my act was at 4 months earlier. So there's a ton of overlap, which is why I wanted to put it out on vinyl only, because I wanted to document that I actually got to perform at Carnegie Hall. But I don't want to fuck any of you guys over where you're thinking this is going to be, oh my God, this is going to be an hour of completely different shit that I never heard of. That's not what it is. What you're going to hear is where my act was 4 months before I recorded it. So there is some different shit, but I'd have to say at least 80% of it is the same jokes, ideas, or whatever. And granted, I tell them differently. I'm sure someone will listen to them and be like, I actually like the way you did the fucking jerk-off joke at Carnegie better than you did it in D.C. So there will be that. But I'm letting you guys know that shit. So I don't want to hear any fucking crap from any of you like I screwed you over. I'm going out of my way to let you know that this is what it is. But it's really, you know, to have a comedy album, you know, is pretty fucking awesome. And it's something that I don't think this will be the last time I do this. I would like to try and, you know, I have a couple of ideas where I could put out just an hour of original shit, maybe just out on vinyl. That could be a cool thing. We'll see. We shall see. So I'm just letting you know that that is, I actually have them. I just have to wait to figure out when I'm going to sell them. But every day that I don't is closer to the holidays, and it'll make a wonderful gift. There you go. Oh, Jesus. What is that guy drilling down there? If any of the construction people who are working on my house are listening to my podcast, I know you guys are doing a phenomenal job, all right? I'm just being a crabby cunt, okay? So don't fucking not tighten down the screws down there, okay? Yeah, you hear that? Yeah. I don't even know. I didn't want to know what the fuck that was. All right. Let's plow ahead here. Dude, he didn't call shit. Verzi. Dear Bill Uder, is that like Uber? I'd like to congratulate Paul Verzi. When no one else in the world was saying LeBron would go back to Cleveland, he was the only one. Oh, no, wait, he wasn't. In fact, he didn't call it until 1 week before the decision was made, and plenty, all in caps, of other people had been making that exact same prediction. You can look at his Twitter feed or listen to his podcast for proof. Basically, everyone was saying it. It was either Miami, Cleveland, or a few other teams that had made phone call. Does Paul know that guessing correctly by picking one of four choices isn't calling it? Jesus, Paul, you're taking a pounding. He acts like he's Sam fucking Rothstein. And he made some out of left field prediction that LeBron was going to the Raptors or something. Here's the thing. I like Paul. I think he's funny, but holy shit. Cool it on the calling it thing. I can't even imagine having an argument with him in person. Oh, this is fucking hilarious. Paul, look at this guy. This guy's sharing my view of you. He seems, you know, what's funny is Paul is listening to this right now. And I know he's got his head down with his looking through his eyebrows. Going, it's fucking bullshit. I said it to Jay Lawhead. Jay Lawhead can say it. I said it two fucking years ago to Jay Lawhead in a bar in Cleveland. He goes, he seems like the type of guy who does that thing where he puts the tip of his fingers together when he's making a point. No, he definitely doesn't do that. Then shakes his hands back and forth from his chest to the floor like an Italian. And do that annoying thing where you look at someone else in the group besides the guy you're making a point to as if to say, hey, we're all together on this point I'm making against this guy in front of me. Am I right, fellas? That's hilarious. That's why I love Italians. I love that they do that. He goes, all due respect to Paul, though. Great guy. Now that you took the piss out of him. He goes, he literally has to be the worst poker player on the planet, too. I can't imagine him playing it cool with anything but pocket aces. Watching Paul's face... And Paul's face alone during the whole process of him chasing a straight would be priceless. I played poker with Paul. Now he has a great poker face, and then he has a way of looking at you. He's got this face when he's looking at you to try to figure out if you're bluffing that actually makes you laugh. All right, Paul, shot has been fired your way. For those of you not listening to the Verzi podcast, this is like the old rap battles where Paul's going to have an answer song to this guy. He's going to defend himself. So everybody listen to the Verzi effect. I will email this. I will copy and paste this and I will email it to him and maybe he can write back. And the worst part of all of this is I'm going to have to listen to him defending himself first to me on the phone before I listen to him do it on his podcast. So I have to listen to him do it twice. All right. Okay, quit drinking, would rather be alone. This next person says, Mr. Embarrassment. Sorry. I thought since you've taken time off from drinking that you'd be a good person to talk to and ask about this. I'm 22 years old, and after hitting the bottle hard since early high school, I decided to take some time off after it seemed to get out of control. Yeah, I've been there. I've been sober for nearly 5 months at this point. The thing is that since putting up the bottle, I've noticed I enjoy spending time alone rather than with other people. I still go out to bars and hang with my buddies who drink and usually just end up being the designated driver.
He says, I have no problem with people who can control their alcohol. Just thought it would be a good personal choice to take some time away. But being sober slash the sober guy at 22 is pretty damn rough when everyone else is getting shitty. Just wondering if you had any insight on the matter. Thanks and go fuck yourself. Well, I can actually relate even at 46 of being the sober guy because of all the free time that comedians have. We can kind of drink like we're still 22. So I know how, I guess, you know, but I'm not 22. So I guess there is an extra amount of stress with that. But, I think what you're doing is a great thing. And, hello, Nia.
Hi.
I think it's a great thing. And, how do I put this? When you go on a run of not drinking, it's all about you, okay? And what you want to do and how long you want to do it. And I wouldn't give in to any, like, external pressures as to when and where you start drinking again. I always find it funny when I'm not drinking to go to a bar and watch basically everybody slowly roofing themselves and then just watch the behavior. And like I said, I don't do it in a judgmental way because it's more kind of observing like, oh, this is how I was acting. It can definitely suck at night, but there's nothing better in the morning when you wake up without a hangover, ready to take on the world. And I would think at 22 to do that's pretty mature, and you got a chance of meeting your judgment on who you start dating would probably be a lot better rather than you're hammered and she's hammered, and you start the relationship off in this cloudy area. You might meet another, you know, smart person your age, who's taken some time off herself. Who knows? But as far as like, if you're feeling pressure to start drinking again, that's the wrong reason to start drinking, because everybody else's drinking is not the reason to come back. But you know, if you feel like you have it under control and you know, or if there's an event coming up and you're like, okay, I'm going to drink at that. And then I'm going to immediately shut it off. But I got to be honest with you, that's a tough thing to do, because I was like, I'm going to drink when I went to Vegas. And then I was immediately going to go back on the wagon. And I was able to do it for 4 days. And then it was like July 4th weekend. And then I had a beer. And then I've just been kind of drinking ever since. But fortunately, I drank so much in Montreal that now I don't want to drink. I think that I almost need to do that. I got to hit like a wall where I either make such an ass of myself or make such a bad decision, or I just do something that it's easy for me to kind of like want to walk away from it. But like I said, it's all up to you. You don't sound like you're an alcoholic. I mean, from your fucking email, I can't really judge it. But like I said, whatever. Do whatever you want to do, but don't start drinking again because everybody else is. I guess that would be my advice. All right, let me read the last of the advertising here, and then I'll wrap it up. Some other questions here. All right, LegalZoom, everyone. Most Americans don't have a will. But why? You don't want the court dictating what – you just pointed at me. I know I got to do this. I'm doing this during this break. You don't want the court dictating what happens to your property and minor children. So why procrastinate? Most people say too expensive or too time-consuming. My answer – LegalZoom.com. Too expensive? LegalZoom makes prices. What? LegalZoom's prices just make sense. I swear to God, I'm dyslexic. Too time consuming? It just takes 20 minutes, and LegalZoom guides you through from start to finish. The service was developed by some of the best legal minds in the country, and they made it painless for you to get the legal help you need. In fact, helping people get legally protected has been their mission and passion for over 13 years. During National Make-A-Will Month, get special pricing on wills and living trusts by entering BURR, B-U-R-R, in the referral box at checkout. Again, that discount code is BURR. It's National Make-A-Will Month, so don't wait. Protect your family, protect your future at LegalZoom today. LegalZoom was developed by top attorneys to provide self-help services at your specific direction. However, they are not a law firm. Legal help is furnished through vetted independent attorneys. LegalZoom.com, discount code BURR, B-U-R-R. And lastly, but not leastly, Hulu Plus, everyone. You've probably tried Hulu on your computer. Hulu Plus is so much more.
With Hulu Plus, you can watch your shows, watch shows on your schedule. I love this, by the way. Hulu Plus has all of your favorite shows like Cosmos, A Space Odyssey, Bob's Burgers, or Undateable, starring Chris D'Elia. And watch every episode of shows like South Park, The Cosby Show, Doctor Who, a bunch more. Hulu Plus works on your computer, smart TV, Roku, Apple TV, Xbox, pretty much any streaming device you already own. You should be blocking off a day just to binge. With Hulu Plus, you're in total control to stream these and thousands more as much as you want, whenever you want. Also, get exclusive access to stream this Criterion Collection movies. And Hulu Plus has all of them. All movies and kids shows are ad-free, too. For only $7.99 a month, get your shows anytime, anywhere. But right now, I'm offering my listeners a two-week free trial when you go to HuluPlus.com/Bill. That's a whole extra week for absolutely free. Please make sure you use HuluPlus.com/Bill so you get that extended free trial and so that they know that we sent you. It helps us to keep the lights on and gives you a better deal. One more time, for the extended free trial, that's HuluPlus.com/Bill. Hey, for that kid also who was talking about not drinking, here's another thing, too. You know, at my age, I see the results of abusing your body with booze, drugs, food. People say food is a drug, which I would actually 100% agree with. You see the results of it. And unfortunately, when I was up in Montreal, I saw a couple of people that are my age and 10 years older. And they either look, the ones that took care of themselves and kind of quit drinking and tried to eat right and that type of thing, they look great. They still got the light in their eye. And then people who've been, hitting it hard, man, it really catches up with you when you get to be my age, where it's like, I've been of legal drinking age longer than I've lived when I wasn't. You know what I mean? That tipping point of like 42 years of age when you've, and forget about underage drinking that you've already been doing. Like, it really, really catches up with you. So what you're doing right now, giving your body a break when it's as young as it is a phenomenal thing to do. And, you could actually experiment steering even more into a healthier lifestyle, like learning how to eat a little bit better. Because at 22, man, I mean, you can fucking drink a 12-pack and eat McDonald's late at night and wake up the next day with a flat stomach. But, like, you're setting yourself up for, just basically being a human being is no different than being an athlete. It's just the timeline is stretched out a lot longer. Like, Father Time is going to get all of us, but those athletes who throughout their career, early in their career, took care of themselves have longer careers. And if you'd like to have a longer career, in other words, a longer life, like doing what you're doing is a great thing. So I don't know. When you look at it that way, there's really no peer pressure. Is there really peer pressure to die sooner? All right. Nia, do you want to chime in on one of these?
Sure.
You want to do dead Nazi grandpa? Did I say Nancy?
Nancy.
Do you know how hard they're laughing in England right now? Fucking Nancy boy. Breaking up for college. Which one do you want to do?
College.
You want to do that?
College, yeah.
You want to stay in your wheelhouse?
Yes.
All right.
Stay away from the Nazi.
Oh, come over here. Okay. Who wears short shorts? All right.
That's really good about quitting drinking. I'm not drinking this week.
Come a little closer.
I'm not drinking this week, I said.
Okay.
It's a good idea.
It is a good idea. All right, here we go. Breaking up for college. Look at that.
What is this?
This is, she just picked up my hotel key for this weekend. That's the W Hotels. That's how they advertise their spa.
And there's a girl on it wearing a bikini, sitting on luggage, and holding like a hat box. So fit Avec Terra Styles. Is she like a trainer there? There's literally a picture of like a half naked woman on your room key.
Yeah. I mean, I said that a long time ago. The W Hotel, everything looks like it's been jizzed on.
Oh, no.
No, they have that hungover lighting and all of that type of stuff. You're making a mistake, lamps,
It's very sexy.
No, it's hacky sexy. That aquarium lighting that they have and all of it. I've decided I'm done with them. I'm done with them. I like those older, stuffier places with the good breakfast. Oh, I want some holiday sauce. I say holidays. Holidays.
Hollandaise.
Hollandaise. How many times I've read that and I still can't retain it? All right, breaking up for college. Dear Bill, my girlfriend and I have been dating for a while throughout high school. It's pretty much the relationship I've always dreamt of. Never really getting tired of each other, no fighting, similar views and tastes. A healthy amount of sex. Sounds like a recipe. And a healthy scoop of sex. Very supportive of each other. However, we both graduated high school and are going off to college. She's going to a liberal arts school in Philly while I'm staying in the state to go to Northern Arizona University. We both agreed that it wouldn't be healthy to try and maintain a long-distance relationship, so we're spending these last few weeks of the summer together, and we'll break it off when she leaves for Philly. Oh, wow, man, that sounds sad.
This is a high school. This is a person who just graduated from high school.
Yeah.
And they're talking about, it's pretty much the relationship I've always dreamt of. Since when? Since you were five?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really nice, but it's like, how is someone who's graduating from high school, like, I'm in the relationship I've always dreamt of. Like, I didn't know that high school people dreamt of relationships in a way that they really understood.
Maybe this person does. See, one of the things when you do these questions is it's very easy to superimpose where your head was at.
But it literally reads like somebody who's like a 30-year-old. It's like, it's what I've always wanted. There's like a healthy amount of sex and we don't get tired of each other. It's like, this is a high school. This is someone who just graduated.
You know what? I actually see your point. They do sound like they're 35.
It's like, when did you dream of having this great relationship?
All right. Well, let's continue here. Let's see what we got here. I could very well.
Calling bullshit.
Oh, you think this is a bullshit?
Well, I don't know. It sounds nice. I'm sorry. Let's continue.
I'm very gullible. You can get me. I could very well see myself spending the rest of my life with this girl, but at the same time, 4 years is a lot of time. I mean, that's a fucking marriage right there. Everybody has that one couple that wins best couple, and they got together the freshman, sophomore year, and they just didn't know how to break up. So then they continue on and continue on, you know? And then you see them at the 10-year reunion. Yeah, we broke it off. When? Last week. And then they get on with their life. I could very well see myself spending the rest of my life with this girl, but at the same time, 4 years is a lot of time and a lot can change in that time. So I don't expect for us to hook up again the second we graduate. However, she's come to be one of my closest friends and I'd like to maintain that friendship, and she agrees. I want to watch her life unfold and watch her inevitable success come alive. Yeah, these very mature people, whether we're romantically involved or not. While this will be a bit of a damper on the beginning of college, I know I'm going to have a blast. My roommate is one of my best friends from high school. He knows how to deal with me, and he'll kick my ass to get back in shape if I start getting mopey about this girl. What's your take on the situation? Any words of advice or encouragement? Thanks in advance. All right. I would say... when you break up with somebody, my thing has always been when you break up with them, you got to get away from them, because as much as you have this mutual agreement or something like that, one of you is going to meet somebody first, and then it's just going to be, rather than enjoying, oh, I met somebody and seeing how that goes, you're going to have to deal with the fact that you're dragging somebody else through it. And they'll hear it in your voice. You know, what are you doing? Nothing. Is there somebody over there? They're going to figure it out. And if she finds out before you, you know, find someone before you, yeah, you know, you're going to try to get her back. I mean, I think you guys should just go cold turkey until you have your Thanksgiving break, personally. Maybe an email here, email there. But I think you guys should, you know, if you're going to break up, you got to break up. I think. Nia?
I'm still trying to understand exactly what the question is, because honestly, it sounds like from this email, it sounds like you've got it figured out perfectly to me. Because we both agreed that it wouldn't be healthy to try to maintain a long distance relationship, so we're spending these last few weeks of summer together. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to be the only person in college, in freshman year of college, who's left their boyfriend or girlfriend behind. That's a pretty normal thing. So Yeah. Spend your summer together. It sounds like a movie, actually. You know, spend the summer together and then you both go off and, yeah, Thanksgiving break, they'll probably see each other and whatnot. But, I mean, I honestly wouldn't put too much pressure on either one of you to try to – it sounds like you're both really amazing, lovely people, and that's really nice. But, yes, you are going to meet other people in college, and the fact that you're being – really realistic about it is
if you had to guess
really I don't really have much to say about
if
this
you had
one.
To guess
it's so mature I kind of that's why I'm sort of like stuck
all right you want to go to dead to... Nancy grandpa
Nazi
all right so yeah you guys seem you got it figured out
yeah I don't really there's not really much else to say
but what about me my advice what I'm saying he shouldn't stay in contact with her
I don't think that's possible. I mean, I don't think you should try to continue a relationship. Like, let's try to like make it work. You guys have already said it's going to be too hard, but to be friends and things.
I mean, part sure. of her blossoming will be her blowing somebody else at some point. I don't want to be crass, but I don't think you want to see.
You don't want to be crass, but you just talked about.
Well, you don't want to see those
blossoming by blowing somebody.
Listen, there's a lot of colors in a sunset. Okay, there's a lot of colors in the sunset. You don't need to see all of them.
Blossoming, coloring the sunset. You're really trying to make it.
Or sunrise, sunrise blossoming. Sunset's the end.
No, I think they if they're going to be friends, if they're going to they're going to text, they're going to email, they're going to see each other's social media activity. Like it's impossible not to and. Someone may get jealous.
It's not impossible not to. You just don't look at it. You cut it out. Cut it out.
It doesn't sound like he wants to cut it out because they really enjoy each other. I don't.
You know what I'm doing? I'm doing the exact thing that I told you not to do. I'm superimposing my thoughts. The shit
yeah, like if we were to, God forbid, if we were to break up or whatever.
Beat it.
You would never want to like text me or like talk to me. You'd just be like,
No, of course I would. But like I wouldn't be involved in it because I know where that's going.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think they should go cold turkey.
Yeah, you'd meet some guy named Roger.
Roger.
Roy. One of those R guys. Rick. Oh, he's got a car. He's awesome. All right. Dead Nazi grandpa. Dear Billy Blowhard. There's been a story going around in the news here, another Philly story, here in Philly for the past few weeks that I want to hear your opinion on. I'm writing because I know you were a big World War II guy. I was for like 2 months when I was reading, and then I fucking now I'm into fucking quinoa.
Yeah, then you became obsessed with something else. That's what Bill does. He gets really into something, and he's like obsessive about it, and then he moves on to the next thing.
Which is why I'm a comedian, why I can't write scripts, because my mind works in bits. I take a little information, and then I go, ooh, there's a spider on the wall.
You know, the funny thing is that I give you a hard time about that all the time, and I'm very similar to that.
Finally. Okay, and following this, I know you're a big World War II guy, and following this has weirdly made me feel sympathy for an ex-Nazi. So he's been following this story, and he feels sympathy for an ex-Nazi. He says, long story short, there was an 89-year-old man who had served as a guard in Auschwitz when he was 17. His mother was born in the United States, so after the war, he moved to the Philadelphia area. He lived here under his original name, and this is until June 2013. There was a word missing there. When a Bavarian town passed a law allowing ex-Nazis to be excommunicated to Germany to face trial. He was eventually arrested and charged with 158 counts of accessory to murder. There was a big argument about it. The guy just died in U.S. prison this week. I got into an argument about this today. Is it fucked up for this guy to get arrested 70 years later for something he did as a teenager? Even if he is the biggest cunt on the planet, I think the Philly cops have other shit to worry about.
It's like that movie Apt Pupil. That sounds like Apt Pupil. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, except this guy was in a guard tower, where that other guy was like a Rudolf Hess more type of a guy. I don't think it's fucked up for you to get arrested for something that you did in your teenage years.
If you killed 158 people.
But this is the thing. He's a 17. This is the thing. If he came at it like this and saying, listen, this guy was a teenager, all right, when this madman took over his country, he doesn't have a choice. He has to join the fucking army. And everybody is like, well, you know, you could say, no, I'm not doing it. And then it's like, then you get your brains blown out. You can't just go, well, fuck it. I'm out of here. It's 17. Where are you going to go? Not only is your country completely at war, the entire continent is at war. And I think it's very easy to not be 17 in the middle of fucking World War II and for you to sit there and go, and like, you know what I would have done? I would have been an angel, and I would have done this, 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 and this, and this. And it's just like I can have empathy for the situation that he was put into, but it's one of those things where it's, I mean,
the thing
what
is,
happened there? Yeah. I mean, they're prosecuting people. I mean, I don't know. Do you think that the 17-year-old kid, I mean, he's a fucking kid.
The person or the people that would be very concerned about having this person arrested would be like,
all right, you know what's hilarious is that me and Nia just talked about this subject for like fucking 15 minutes and came to this great place as to why you have to arrest this guy, and the fucking batteries wore out. God damn it. I know. I told you. I told you. This is just not, this just ain't my fucking day. So all I can do is paraphrase. Oh, God, what a fucking buzzkill. It's basically kind of what I left off saying. It's like you got to prosecute him because he was part of a war crime. So you have to prosecute him. But I, you know, I was basically making the point that if this kid in Philly, who I don't agree with the way he seems to be defending him. I'm defending him the way I am. I'm defending that 17-year-old kid in this way. That everybody, if he was to walk into a, if you, anybody that was to walk, any of you guys were to walk into a bar and you were to bring that up and you'd ask people what they would do, what they would have done in that situation, everybody's going to be Captain America. Everyone's going to be like, dude, you know what I would have done? I would have gone, I would have fucking shot Hitler in the face, and I would have done this, I would have done that, and all this type of shit. And it's just like, you know, any, it's very easy to be fucking sitting in a bar drinking a fucking Rolling Rock and paint yourself out to be this unbelievable hero and all this shit that you would have done. But like, I think, unfortunately, this kid was born at the wrong fucking time. I don't think that, like, I mean, I really don't think that this kid, when, you know, he would, do you think that this kid was just an evil kid and he was like psyched to be up in that guard tower? Or is he just, I mean, who knows? Like, I'm not saying that.
I don't really know that it, I don't really think that it matters, which was my point. I feel like this person's sympathy is misplaced.
I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about me now.
Oh, it's about you.
Yeah, I'm talking about my opinion.
Which is what? That you can't, because he was 17 years old, chances are he didn't want to do it, and he was forced to do it.
I'm saying at 17, you're very impressionable.
Yes.
You can get talked, you can get brain, like a 35-year-old person, 45-year-old, 55-year-old person, you know, at that point, you know so much more about life. Like, people can't come up to you and tell you, like, it's much more difficult for somebody to come up to you and try to convince you of something that you know isn't true, that you know is not, and you can spot crazy from a fucking mile away. But what I was talking about, which of course got lost, was what usually, I don't know what it is about people who are smart and people who are like, hey, live and let live. They're, because of that intellect, they're also not, they don't choose violence. And unfortunately, that's, you need to fight fire with fire with the, like, well, violence doesn't solve anything. It's like violence would have solved this. Like when you were dealing, when they were first starting to take over and people were choosing self-preservation rather than helping out their neighbors, is what they should have gone out, is they should have gone out and like, I mean, like, this, once again, I'm doing this woulda, coulda, shoulda shit. Like, oh, dude, you know what I would have done? You should have gone out there, or you should have organized the people on your block, you know, and if you had a Jewish family on your block going like, look, we're all down with, well, these are our friends. They're not taking them. And if they come down here, you know,
we're fucking taking them out. And if you started that movement and you started taking them out before they took everybody else out, you could actually stop it. But the thing is decent people, regular people, live and let live people are essentially not organized. And that's the only advantage that they had, was they were walking around, they were organized. And then I think that people choose the cowardly decision of self-preservation. But I don't think self-preservation is cowardly at 17. I think 17, I mean, you were a boy. You're not, it's like that Britney Spears, not quite a woman. You're not quite a man there, Nia. And all of a sudden this fucking event comes along and you get swept up into it. So look, if this guy was, this is what I'd say. If this guy was 30 and he was in a guard tower, fuck him. All right. If you're 17 in a guard tower, you still got to prosecute him. But like, it's not like I'm going to sit there and be like, dude, you know what I would have done at 17? When the entire continent was at war, I would have fucking walked to Africa and just left it behind. Like, I mean, I don't know what this kid's, I mean, his option was basically he had to take a bullet in his own head or go up there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm out on this one, I think. I'm out. I mean, I just don't feel like, I don't know. I don't have anything really to contribute anymore to that question other than what I just said about their sympathy being misplaced.
Yeah, I can't seem to have a conversation with you about what I'm saying. You just keep going back to this kid. I'm not saying kid. I'm saying what I'm saying. And I'm actually talking about how a fucking lunatic like Hitler comes into power. He doesn't come into power because he makes sense. He comes into power because all these other people that don't think he makes sense, they choose self-preservation.
Right.
Okay, he's not going after me. I'm Protestant. He's not going after me. I'm Catholic. He's not going after me. I'm straight. And the fear of watching your neighbors who you had a fucking cookout with, and you hear them screaming as they're getting dragged out of the house, and you know you should be doing something, but you don't because of your own self-preservation. I think it's very easy for people to hear this story and be like, oh, that fucking Nazi piece of shit, blah, 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 blah. These people as adults would choose self-preservation, who would criticize what this kid did when he was 17. That's my point. My point is not that this is wrong that they're prosecuting. But I also don't look at this dude who, when he was 17, who ended up in that situation, like this was somebody who was clearly making decisions in his life or even had control over the direction of his life. I mean, there's a reason why you can't drink till you're 21. It's because of the level of immaturity you have. You think this kid at 17 has the fucking maturity to be able to handle what's going on? Walking down the street and seeing people hanging from, you know, by piano wire and that type of thing. I mean, it's just another ruined life because of this fucking psycho. Could you agree with that?
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
All right, this is way too heavy a fucking topic to be discussing here. So that's basically the gist of what
maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just too early. It's too heavy. I don't know. Maybe I'm still asleep and I can't quite get into it.
After what meal during the day can you discuss former guard tower, Nazi guard tower kids?
More of an after lunch conversation, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the podcast for this week. Jesus Christ, the levels just went up. Sorry about that. That's the podcast for this week. Thank you for everybody for listening. Thank you for writing in. Thank you to the great Tony V for giving me that great intro up in Montreal. Thank you to the Montreal Comedy Festival, everybody who came out. And that's it. Go fuck yourselves. I'll talk to you next week.